podcast where we discuss all things related to creating, living, and making projects. I'm your host, Grant Alexander. Joining me, as always, is Jesse Ratfink and Adam Mackey. I want to start by apologizing for not being here last week. I missed a great episode with my friend Jeff, but I'm here this week. Last week, I was sick. I had a sore throat. That sore throat eventually cleared up and turned itself into a sinus infection. And I had my first ever sinus headache in my life, and it was horrible. I basically would take Advil and Tylenol, and there was only like a two-hour window between when I would take those that they were both active at the same time, basically. And in those 2 hours were the only time I could do anything, and it was horrible. I don't wish it upon anybody. And I'm just coming down from that, so if I sound a little nasally, it's possibly that, or yeah. So I've been sick. I haven't been doing much. Definitely don't recommend people get a sinus infection. Not a good time. Nope. But today, actually, I was helping out with the Scouts and Cub Scouts building their up in Canada, we call them Cub Cars and Scout Trucks, and down in the States, I believe it's the Pinewood Derby. And so there's a whole bunch of research into why we call ours the Cub Car Carnival, with all three of those things being with a K. And I want to try and get to the bottom of that, but nobody has any answers. And I really think it basically comes down to, so a soapbox derby. Do you know what that is?
Yes.
Where you like ride in the car.
Oh, okay.
It's a like non-motor. Yeah.
Down a hill.
Yeah. No motor. Yeah.
No motor. Just get no pedals, no Flintstone, no nothing. Just down a hill. Soapbox derby. Well, those were called Cub Cars for a long time. I don't know why. But Cub Cars spelled with two C's. So the best I can find is that there were a lot of scout troops who were already doing Cub Cars with a C. So they decided to call these Cub Cars with two K's. And someone said, I like alliteration, and I'm going to call it the Cub Car Carnival. And oh my God. I think they didn't realize it, but it was the 70s, so they might have done it on purpose. You never know.
That's what I'm currently mulling over. It's like, was it just a cute, precious Canadian that doesn't know about that organization?
No, the whole thing is run by like the main guy who wears like a big like white witch's hat or something, right?
That's the KKK, yeah. Not the scouts, though.
No, but I'm saying the guy that runs the carnival wears a white pointy hat.
Oh, no. So anyways, they also call them Cub Car Rallies, which I also go, that's right. And wow. I'm like,
oh, no.
That's okay because it's only two Ks. But I just think it's like, I don't think anyone's ever really thought it through. And I don't know if it anyone else other than me, like am I it doesn't affect me. So maybe I'm like, that Karen in the corner yelling about something that doesn't affect them. This has to be racist, right? That's what I'm feeling right now, so I don't want to say any more than that. But I will say that the amount of people who do not know how to use tools astounds me. Mm-hmm. So they went to the Ottawa Tool Library, which is a great place, and I've bought tools from them. I don't rent from them because I have all the tools they have. But if you don't have tools, you live in an apartment, whatever, you don't have space to store tools, they're a great thing. They're a nonprofit organization where you can rent out tools. So they got the tools from the Ottawa Tool Library, which, of course, if you don't use your tool very often, you may not know how to set it up properly. So it had they got a bandsaw, and it's one of those like three-wheel Craftsman. So it's not the best bandsaw, but they're donated tools, so you get what you have. But it was so out of whack when I first tried to set it up. It was like just horrible, and the people were just starting to use it, and nobody like told them like how to adjust the blade guard. No one told them like how to adjust anything else. And I was like, it's crazy. Then there was all these kids were trying to use, they had like three different scroll saws. And I think scroll saws with kids are the way to go. But if you want to cut, like do some big cutting, you sometimes need the bandsaw. But, so that like the adults were using the bandsaw for the big cutting and the kids were using the scroll saws for the more finer details. But the kids just would not like listen, the whole point is you're supposed to, like, you don't use a tool. You're going to use a tool. You just have to talk to a red shirt before you use the tool. That's all you got to do. And the amount of times that I caught a kid who hadn't talked to someone and one of the, like, one kid broke a blade and they didn't have any spare blades.
Oh, God.
So, but like a scroll saw blade, I couldn't believe they didn't have any spares because.
Yeah.
That's scroll saw blades just, they break when you look at them wrong sometimes.
I was going to say, so, that it breaks so easily.
Yeah, especially when you're cutting like big material or trying to do really intricate cuts, which is exactly what they were doing. I would have run it differently. Only from a like organizational perspective, I would have put one adult at one tool. But that didn't make any sense because when they weren't being used, you were just sitting there twiddling your thumbs. So then you'd go trying to find someone to help because there were also like kids chiseling away at shit. And and I was like, and I watched like one of the other scouters. She didn't know what she was doing. And she was trying to help them a person hold the block while they chiseled it. And I just said, you don't know. You need to get your hand away from that. She's like, but it keeps moving. And I was like, yeah, it does. It's not a good spot. You need to try and you just got to switch. You got to put more clamps. You got to do something. What you're doing, no.
Yeah.
And,
and that's the thing. You said have an adult at each tool, but you got to make sure those adults know what they're doing as well because half of them don't.
Right. But so there were enough adults who understood tools to be at every power tool. But the problem was there wasn't any adults to be at the chisels and the saws and the.
Yeah.
Oh, I just keep thinking about how much it would hurt if someone chiseled your fingers. Oh my God. Yep. That's it. Oh God.
That's some horror movie.
Seen it. Yeah, that's horror movie stuff. While I thought, now, like, the kid was, like, barely tapping on the chisel, but all it takes is for, like, it to hit a weak spot in the wood and it slip out, and...
Yeah. One of my wife's friend's husbands works in construction, and he had a brand new chisel, and as he put it in his tool belt, he sliced down the side of his leg, had to get all stitches and everything. Because, like, a brand new chisel is so sharp. The ones that they buy, they are, anyway. But if you have any say, or if you can talk to whoever orders stuff for there, I can't recommend any more the 360 scroll blades for kids.
Yeah. These were borrowed tools.
Okay.
So from the tool library. But yes, I agree. That is the way to go for kids, especially on like small little projects. The biggest problem was, like, the scroll saws had clearly been used by people who don't quite know what they're doing. And so they had, like, the little feet were, like, a little bit crooked. And, like, so one side was constantly, like, putting way too much pressure and the other side was doing nothing. And kids were trying to do, like, cuts that without support and the pieces were just flying everywhere. Anyways.
Yeah.
It was, everyone had fun and nobody got hurt.
Yay.
That's all that matters.
Yay. Adam, what have you been up to?
I have been printing a camera dolly. So I designed and I've got it here. Yeah. So there's two metal rails. Like an end block. And then there's a motor at this end, which I'm currently working on the power for. I've got everything there. Which goes, so all the power and everything goes on the end, plugs into USB. And then there's a pyramid-looking thing, which I can't reach now, but a pyramid-looking thing with a quick release for my camera on top, which sits on bearings, which ride on that rail. And then through the middle of that is a threaded rod, which connects to that motor, which will push it back and forth. So I can just sit it on my workbench and just have like the camera pan across as it's recording and stuff, which I know you can buy them, but these things cost me like $4 in parts, like. I had the motor laying around. I had all the bolts and everything. And I've been working with those melt-in inserts into 3D printing. They're so good. I wish I had bought the stuff to do them earlier. But they're so easy. And just so easy to put in, yeah. So I've been working on that, and then everything else I've been putting in the blender. So I've been 3D modeling everything. I have 3D modeled two of the prizes that we are giving away that I mentioned in my clamp video, which I have animated to come up on screen and sort of rotate around and stuff. It actually turned out really well. I'm just waiting on a housemaid to send me a picture of the kit so I can model that. But yeah. And then I've been 3D modeling all the bike parts and stuff. I have a really cool idea that I'm going to be working on tomorrow. So, yeah.
It is impressive that you are just like going into it and just able to do it so quickly. That's really awesome.
I've actually amazed myself quite a bit. So the bike parts and stuff, I literally just sat there with verniers and measured everything I needed to measure and modeled it from scratch. But I had all the measurements. Whereas the 5575 screwdriver kit thing from Chapman, all I had was a picture. So I just made up like how big I think the case would be. I just made it that size and then just made everything to look like it was the same as the picture and just modeled it all from like no measurements at all. And it turned out looking really good.
Extra impressive, yeah. I think.
I think that you should send that to Chapman.
I thought about that. And then
see if they'll send you a little prize pack.
I thought about that and I might contact them. But the thing is, it's not completely accurate to to what they actually sell. So I don't know, like the screwdriver.
Send it to them and say, hey guys, I need it to be completely accurate. Hook a brother up.
Yeah.
Or you can use Clamp 24 to save yourself 15%.
Yeah. Well, it looks good enough for the video. Like it's only on screen for 5 seconds. So
yeah,
but yeah, I'm pretty happy with it. And then, yeah, I designed, ISO tunes, the earmuffs and the earplugs, which turned out really well.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you, Jesse?
All of the glasswork. I have made huge strides and progress this week. I cut so much glass. I got my first injury. So no one tells you just how many glass shards are going to be over everything that you own when you're done cutting glass. Yeah. No one really talked about how messy it was. And I made a big mistake, and I was wearing house shoes, like little flip-flop sandals, doing this. And a piece of glass fell off the work surface, got into those, and when I went to walk out of the room, the shard went into my big toe of my right foot. And oh my God, the blood. There's so much. It didn't hurt too bad because I was able to just get it right out with tweezers. But like, oh, that was gross.
So that is the... When I was doing the flint napping, they said, like, obviously, like, the thing you're making is going to be sharp. They said the thing that cuts everyone every time, it's the little piece that you get off. It's just as sharp.
Yep.
It's the other side of it. And they said it's, like, even sharper for some reason because it finds its way in your, like, socks and into your feet. And, like, obviously, at Maker Camp, we were all a lot of times people were walking around. Like, sometimes it's nice and you are walking around in regular shoes or sandals, but this time everyone's wearing rain boots. But no open toes, that's for sure.
Yeah, no open toes.
I thought you were going to say no one tells you when you start this that glass is sharp.
No, there were so many warnings about that. Like the books that I've looked through and the videos I've watched, they're all like, be very careful with your glass pieces. The edges might be sharp. You might cut yourself. And I'm like, yeah, of course. But, you know, I have now learned closed-toe shoes and I have to vacuum fucking everything when I'm done, just in case, because I don't want to track it to other parts of the house or have like an animal step on anything. So I've had to be like super clean and obsessed about it. And then let's see. So I also did grinding. Problem is I just have a stone, so that it's kind of slow going. But if you keep everything wet enough, you don't make more shards, which is great. I also started foiling my glass pieces. So I decided to just use like...
Oh, that looks awesome.
Some of the clear glass that I was just using as like practice cuts because I can fit it all together. So I have two more pieces I need to foil and then I can start figuring out soldering.
I was going to say, so you solder all that together, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you
So the foil is so that you can solder it together or is it for looks?
Yes. So this is basically copper foil. So yeah, you'll be able to just sort of like put your flux down on that and then solder on top of it. And so that will be connecting all of the pieces and also the hanging loops that I have to put on it so I can like put it up somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. Hmm.
Do you follow Dean Duplantis's mother, Hearth and Garden Art?
No.
Yes. So she does stained glass. And you should go take a look. And she has some really, really cool stuff. It's like Hearth and Garden Art, I'm pretty sure is the name.
Is she on Instagram?
Yes, she is on Instagram.
I'll have to look it up once I am done because I cannot multitask for shit today.
Fair enough.
And then
I wonder if she changed her name.
Maybe. Yeah, I just kept finding like home stores with random stuff. But yeah, the further I get in this, the more I realize I kind of want different tools. I did upgrade my running pliers. These are fucking awesome. Perfect breaks every time. I love them. They make so much sense compared to those horrible plastic shits I had before. But the thing right now that I'm struggling with is the cutters. So the two that I have are pencil style cutters. And oh my God, do they hurt my hands after like a couple hours of doing it. And I'm also having a hard time just getting the angle right all the time. So I'm thinking that I'm probably going to invest in a pistol grip cutter or the like custom grip from Toyo just because they're more ergonomic and they make more sense. Because these, like, I had to take two different times of cutting because my hands were just like aching from the amount of pressure I was having to put on it. So yeah,
Do they make scroll saws for gloss?
So they do. They are very expensive.
Oh, okay.
I also looked, there are also like lasers that can cut glass pretty well, and there are some stained glass artists that have those, but it's just like those are so expensive that I want to make sure I'm really into it before I make a big
Like you're not,
that, you know,
if you go straight to that, you're not learning the fundamentals.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm definitely learning everything. I'm making like all of the mistakes, but
yeah,
I don't know. I'm like hoping that once I'm done
difference
with this.
We've talked about this before, but it's the difference of like, if all you do is put IKEA kits together, you're not going to understand as much as if you actually built the thing from scratch and cut all the pieces yourself and built the kit.
I'm definitely doing it from the ground up. It's been interesting.
So would you say that it's harder than you anticipated or easier?
I would say harder, just because every single part of the process I think is really something that just requires a lot of experience.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, right now I'm still in the place where I'm just messing something up every few minutes and having to do something different. Like with the foiling, oh my God, it's so hard. Like so much harder than I thought. Because you watch people do it and you think, oh, that looks kind of relaxing. It goes on really quick. And then you try to do it yourself. And holy shit, is it difficult. Like,
how does the foil stick? Is it like sticky back foil?
Yeah, it's a sticky back. And they come like the one that I have, it's just copper on top, copper on bottom. But they also have one with the black back that makes your errors a little less noticeable. So I'm also sort of struggling with that because the foil is just super reflective and you can see where the edges aren't even. So
right.
I'm going to have to do some like cleanup with an X-Acto knife, I think, before I solder. Yeah.
So my opposite of harder than you thought, is also to do with glass. So my mate messaged me a couple of days ago and he said, hey, he was mowing and he has around his pool, he's got like the glass panels for the fence because you have to legally have fences here around your pools.
Yeah.
And he was mowing and a rock flung up and hit the corner. The worst part where it could hit the corner and shattered it like a couple of weeks ago. So he had to go buy a new glass panel and he said, oh, can I borrow your trailer? Come get this panel. And then do you mind helping me install it? I said, yeah, that's all good. And we carried it around to his backyard. This glass panel, it's 2 meters by 1.2. So like a full sheet almost.
Yeah.
Like a foot less wide, but almost a full sheet of whatever. Of this like thick glass. It's pretty, it was heavy, but it was also really awkward because it's like, it's heavy all over. Like it's not like top heavy where you can try and like carry it upside down or something. It was just like, yeah, just, so we got it around the back and we're looking at it going, this is going to be the biggest pain in the ass to pick up this piece of glass and slot it into these two little feet on the ground. And we put like, we spent about half an hour going over different ways that we could do it. All right, if you stand here and I stand here, and then we'll make sure we bend down like this together, and we'll make sure the plate, like he got blue tack to hold the plate in so that it wouldn't fall onto the glass as we're trying to slide it in, like all this stuff. It took us like 5 seconds to put it in. It was so easy. But we put it in, he tightens up all the screws and everything, and then he looks at me and he goes, shit. And on the bottom of like the post is a, like, you know how you've got like the cap that slides over the post to like make the bottom look pretty, like a little, like on a pole, mm-hmm. on a pole.
Yeah.
He forgot to put those back in. So we had to take the panel, lift it back up. So, but luckily we just got my wife to like slide, we just lifted up one end a little bit enough for her to slide it in and put it back down. But it was just so frustrating. But,
so it was easier than you thought?
So much easier than we thought.
Right. Is that because you planned it out?
I think we just anticipated it to be such a pain in the ass. Like, he's like, that piece of metal is going to fall over, or the, like the clamp part's going to fall over and get in the way. And the glass is so heavy. How are we going to light it up? Like, how are we both going to make sure that we get it in our slot properly? And he's so stressed about like it smashing and stuff. Like the whole drive home, he put like cushions and stuff down underneath it in the trailer, but he was so stressed that one bump and it was just going to shatter. So,
well, that does happen. Yeah. That's the crazy part about glass. Like, I don't like, especially tempered glass. I remember I got a table from someone and loaded it in my car. Everything was good. Got it home. Everything was good. Went to put the very last piece of glass down. Like,
shattered.
I don't even think it touched the ground. I think it shattered in the air. I don't know what happened. But it just disintegrated in my hands, and I went, "Well, that sucks." So I built a wood top for it. But
it's such a weird thing, like especially with the pool fence. Like when it shattered, he had glass, like tiny bits of glass everywhere, like all through the pool and everything. It took him so long to get rid of it all.
Yeah,
but you could boot a soccer ball at the fence like as hard as you can, and it would not break. It has to be in that corner.
Yeah. I had my windows replaced, and they're like, they're triple pane glass, like 4x8 foot.
Yeah.
Like they're a full sheet of plywood piece of glass. Or bigger than that, maybe. But I had like a professional company coming into it because I like DIYing, but I also don't like that much. I'm not that much of a DIYer to risk the glass. So I got a company in. And of course, one of them breaks when they're like one of the old windows that they're taking out breaks. And I was at work and my, I can't remember if my dad or my wife was home. Anyways, it breaks, whatever. But they like did such a bad job of like trying to even find the glass. As soon as you walked in, like from like my front door and the glass is all the way at the back of my house, I was like, what's that on the floor? You know what I mean? Like, it was that much of like, I can't believe you missed that. Anyways, I don't know. That's an aside. I'm trying to think of a time that I thought something was going to be easy, and it was actually so much harder than I thought. And I would say, like, when you watch someone doing any kind of, like, hand tool work with super sharp tools, yeah, it looks so easy. And I don't think I know how much effort they're putting into pushing through the wood. Is it a lot of effort? Is it a little bit of effort? I don't know. I know when I do it, it feels like it's a lot of effort. Mm-hmm. But is it really? But am I comparing it to, like, a spinning blade, which is, you know, you don't have, you let the blade do the work. Whereas with a hand plane, if you just let the blade sit there, it's not going to do anything. You know what I mean? You got to put a little effort behind it.
I feel like video definitely gives off that perception, because I've done that many times where I'm like, this person wasn't working as hard as I am right now. Like, what?
Right.
What is happening here?
I would say even sharpening stuff, getting stuff really, 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 like, razor sharp, looks so easy. I've watched so many videos, and I cannot, for the life of me, get stuff to be as sharp as using, like, a, like, I watch people, like, do, like, a knife on, like, by hand, and they just do it, and it's super razor sharp. And the only way I could do that is if it's in a, like, a holder, like a jig or a whatever. And then it's like, I'm not doing it. I don't know.
Well, I think hand tools are sort of, that's where it's always a little more difficult. Like, anything that you are doing manually, just because it does take experience to know what you're doing, because almost any time Tyler and I have done a project and we end up using a power tool, like, for example, paint sprayer was one of the, like, more recent ones that I thought, oh my God, this is going to be a nightmare to set up. It's going to be a nightmare to do everything. And it, like, it went so well. It was so easy. Like, we painted our entire garage white, like the ceilings, the floors, the walls, everything. And it was fine. But, like, as an example, I was watching a Mia Maples video on YouTube the other day, and she was doing, like, TikTok renovation hacks. And so products that people were, you know, saying would make everything so much easier. And one of them was a giant, like, super giant paint roller. It had to be probably 2.5-3 feet long.
Yeah, I've seen that one.
And she thought, this is going to be great. It's going to be so easy. And, like, the learning curve of it, you know, she was, like, really disappointed at first, but it worked out in the end. So, yeah, I think that there's something to be said about, like, power tools as opposed to manual / hand tools. It always makes it a little more exciting when you're first starting.
I think power tools give you a sense of, like, that you're better than you are.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. Like, I feel like I could cut a straight line with a power tool, and I couldn't with a hand tool without practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
And I'd really, like, sometimes with the power tool, I still can't cut a straight line. So I don't know. But was there any tools, I guess, thinking about that, was there any other tools that you thought were going to be either very difficult to use and they ended up being very easy, or that were, like, scary at the start or whatnot?
I feel like soldering, for me, when I first tried to do it, it seemed so difficult. I had no idea how you would get it to work. And that now that I actually understand how it works, it's so easy.
I found with soldering, I first learned it in school. Like, I did it at home with, like, one of those solder guns that's, like, way too big for whatever project I was doing. So it was, like, way overheating stuff, but it didn't really matter. Like, but it was definitely hot enough, and that worked fine because it got shit hot. And then I did it in school, and we were using the appropriate, and, like, schools often buy good stuff because their student, like, they want to buy top name brand stuff, so they're not dealing with the garbage. So I remember having, like, the blue Weller with, like, an adjustable knob, like a nice soldering iron, and everything worked perfect. But then I had, like, I've gone through, like, so many soldering irons. I keep buying them, and I keep buying cheap ones because the other ones are so expensive. And when you buy a cheap soldering iron, it is not worth your time. It makes soldering difficult.
That was what I was about to say.
Yeah.
It's one of the tools that I want to upgrade. Like, I haven't even used it yet, but this one doesn't have any sort of heat controls or anything. And I mean, it's pretty gigantic. So it's like, that is another one that I'm thinking about upgrading, because if this doesn't go well, I think I might say, oh, I need a better one, and it'll go easier for me.
The nice thing about, like, if you get a good soldering iron, it's going to be good no matter what. Especially if you get I think it's Weller that has like the adjustable knob. I don't know if they still make it, but those were like the ones to get.
Yeah. So I definitely want to get a nicer one and a soldering iron stand.
Yeah.
I've got this one from Audi, and you put gas in the bottom, like a gas lighter.
Yeah.
And then you just, and then it just heats up like gas, right?
Oh, that's
and then it's got adjustment here so you can change the temperature. It wasn't that expensive, but it works so well. I use this all the time.
Looks like it works good on like small stuff.
Yeah, small stuff. It's got heaps of attachments and stuff as well. Heaps of different heads.
Yeah, the little butane ones are good for small stuff for sure, and they're good in like to have as a, like in your travel kit. But yeah. I would not want to rely on, if you want to solder a bunch of stuff, you don't want to rely on a butane one.
Yeah, well, see, I don't solder that much, and when I do, I'm literally just soldering two wires together usually, soldering onto a terminal of a speaker or whatever. Circuit boards. For circuit boards and stuff, I find it very hard to solder. I know there's a lot of tricks and stuff. You need a real hot and point, like a really thin point, and like all this different stuff you can do, but I don't do it enough to actually learn how to do it properly.
Go ahead.
I don't remember. Oh yeah. The biggest thing that I have with the butane one is that the heat comes out like from the flame. So if you put your hand over the iron, like trying to angle a certain way, the heat burns your hand so quick and it drives me insane.
Yep. That is a problem. But the other ones are also hot down there too. They're just hot a different way.
But it's not blowing out the heat like the butane one does.
Fair. I think, thinking about it, one thing that I actually thought was so much harder than it was crimping wires. I used to have such a hard time crimping wires because I did not use the proper tools. And I think a lot of making something harder than it is using either cheap tools, using the like just wrong tools, like using pliers to try and crimp wires. You can't crimp wire. Well, you can, but it's not very good it's really difficult to crimp wires properly with the wrong tools. Like, you can do it, but like I used to always like, because they're always like in a car, you never solder, you always crimp your tools. So I'm like, I know how to solder, so I'm soldering everything.
Yeah, I solder everything in the car.
Right. Well, the problem with soldering everything in the car is it makes a weak point and it breaks. So because the solder doesn't bend and the wire does, it'll break over time with the bumps of the road.
How's crimping gonna bend?
So the crimping allows it to move a little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't have flexibility.
There's just a little bit more flexibility.
Yeah, right. Just twisted tape. That's all you need.
You know, no. Do not do that. Do not listen to Adam. But seriously,
that's 17-year-old Adam.
Once I had the proper crimping tools, and even now, like I just understand it a lot better. So I can use cheaper crimping tools, but like on the race car team, we have like a super nice like change out a set of like tool dies for depending on like what color you're using, and it's wonderful to use. But it's like with the race team. But when we're crimping stuff for the race car, because we don't want that shit to break.
Speaking of that, Tyler is watching that F1 show. And I just watched the new Haas car have a horrible wreck. And oh my God, I walked into the room like right when it happened. It was very jarring. Oh, Formula. That show stresses me out.
I don't understand the joke. Formula.
Formula?
So I'm wearing a shirt that says Formula One, cattle drive to survive.
Right. Oh, okay. I'm not sure I understand it either. Money?
I don't understand it.
No, well, so Formula One, Drive to Survive, but this company makes ice cream, and so they make a bunch of cow jokes off popular stuff.
Okay.
And I got, somebody bought me, so you just mentioned the F1 show on Netflix, which is Formula One, Drive to Survive, which, by the way, seeing the Haas team, I've only watched one episode because I only watch it at my dentist. I feel like I don't have Netflix the same way I didn't have a Nintendo growing up. And the only way I got access to Nintendo was going to the dentist. And I because they had a Nintendo. So I'd be like, we need to go to the dentist early. And I remember like getting to like level like 3 or 4 and being like, oh, it's time for you to like go in. And you're like, no.
That's funny.
Anyways.
What a good way to get kids in.
Yeah. Well, now everyone has like my kids have more tablets than you can shake a stick at. Yeah, I don't know. Having kids, that looked a lot fucking easier than it is. So
put that out there. Definitely.
That is entirely fair, yeah. Something that...
And it looks hard.
Oh, yeah.
Having kids looks hard, but it also looks easier than it actually is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, us childless people, we only see glimpses of that. We don't have it 24 hours a day. So, yeah, the difficulty level is...
Have so my kids higher. For 24 hours. You'll want to murder yourself.
Yeah, no, they'll be good for those 24. That's the crazy part.
Yeah, they're always good for other people.
Yeah. You go out in public with your kid, and everyone's like, oh, he's so well-behaved. I'm like, you should see him at home, right? Like,
yeah,
he's looking real well-behaved. I don't understand. He's just, like, autistic in public or something, because at home he's not. Like,
So something that was easier than I thought it would be is leather working. I was very worried about starting it. And like obsessed over getting all the right stuff. And I feel like leather working is more, as opposed to stained glass, it's more of a like a skill that you can do with different layers of tools. Like you don't have to have the best of the best as long as you understand the process and what you're doing.
Right.
Leather working just, it came together super easy for me. And I was honestly digging through my stuff today and thinking maybe I should do more. I don't know. But that was definitely the one that surprised me the most out of like all the skills that I learned at Instructables.
Yeah, I would agree that it seems way, way more daunting because people talk about it like, oh, but a lot of it's like repetitive work, like hand stitching. Yeah. It's definitely not like fun, but it's like sanding in that you just keep doing it until you're done. Like there's nothing else to it. Yeah, you could definitely screw up hand stitching. You can, like, you know, stitch the wrong way a couple times and it looks like shit. But for the most part, like, you know, like you're going outside, outside. Oh, I started on inside, inside, shit. Right? Like, I've seen that before. But for the most part, but I'll say that's just the beginner, like some of the hand-carved details that I see people do is crazy talent that I don't have.
Yeah, the carving and embossing is like a little bit above me, but I still do think I would be able to like get it down after a couple of attempts, you know.
I think the embossing is like pretty easy. It's literally like lining up a stamp. It takes patience more than skill. Right? Like if you're like hitting the stamps, there's like you just got to have patience to actually line it up. But like then it becomes like the how to finish around the edges and stuff is all knowledge.
Yeah.
But I feel like the hand carving is a lot of skill. I feel some of the embossing that I've done, I can just 3D print the pattern. Like I can just do any pattern I want, 3D print it, put it on the thing, cut out that piece. Bob's your uncle.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in saying that, I've also seen a lot of people who have managed to fuck it up really bad.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're not really seeing the actual design. You're seeing, like, the edges of the stamp they made. Or just, you know, there's all these, like, little errors in the way it looks. So that's why I kind of slammed those two together, because I feel like you can fail pretty spectacularly for both of them.
Fair.
I tell you what, are you going on about leather or something else?
I was just going to transition to something else, but you got it. You go for it.
Okay. Something that I think looks harder than I reckon it actually would be is rug tufting. To me, it looks like it would be such a learning curve, but I reckon once you know what you're doing, it would actually be a lot easier than I tell myself it would be.
I actually think that it's harder than it looks. Because only way to say this is that it's real easy to make a rug, but it's harder to actually make it good. And yeah. I think you could definitely make a pattern in a rug and it would look fine. But I think it's one of those things that, like, the difference between a beginner and an expert, as soon as you saw them side by side, you'd be like, oh shit, yeah, I see it. But if you see them separately, you're like, yeah, that's a pretty nice rug. That's a pretty nice rug.
Yeah.
So yeah. Well, I suppose it's like.
Oh god.
We're just gonna talk each other over each other the whole time.
Yeah, we're.
You better edit this one really good, Adam.
But for rug tufting, I think a lot of the error is really in the finishing of the rug. Because if you have, you know, a great loom and you have an awesome tufting gun, like, you can get a lot done. But just the amount of detail work that great rug artists put into the finishing touches, you know, like trimming all the colors to slightly different lengths, finishing the edges so they look really nice. Like, there's just so much stuff that I think you have to do a lot until you get it right.
Yeah.
Which is part of why I haven't jumped into that either, because it's like, oh, I don't need another thing that I need years of experience to get really good at.
I was actually going to say the same thing, because you see, I've seen people that will do like the rug tufting and then they shave the other side like you're supposed to do, so it's all one length, and then that's it. They say they're done, like, after putting the back on. But then you get like the more experienced people who actually get like hair trimmers and go around every line and make all the lines and everything stand out, and it looks so much better.
Great.
Yeah, I love watching those videos.
Yeah.
And that's where I think, like, it looks like it can be very easy to finish a rug. And I guess it all depends on what
that you, looks what
you,
hard.
Right.
Like, you're going to be very steady.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it is probably harder than you think, and also easier. Like, using the gun looks pretty fucking easy. You press the trigger, it goes, bup, 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 bup. Like, it looks pretty easy, and you follow a line. Okay. But, like, making that actually turn into a good rug, I think, is the hardest, is harder than it looks.
Definitely. I guess also a recent example, setting up a rigid heddle loom is actually easier than it looks.
Oh.
I was very concerned about getting things wrong when I was, like, stringing this thing. And now that I've done it 3 times, it's like, okay, I was really overthinking this. Because it's just so much easier than you think. You really are just gathering all the strings and keeping tension. Like, gathering and tension is really all you're worried about, even though when you watch like a 20-30 minute video on it on YouTube and they're telling you all of the ways it could go wrong, you think it's going to be a disaster. And it wasn't for me at all. Like, I don't think I've had any issues with the way I've threaded it. So
I will say, a lot of what we do is actually easy because of the other skills we have. Understanding how machines work. So I had never used a three-wheel bandsaw before at all. These little Craftsman three-wheel.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never used that one. And as soon as I looked at it, it didn't have thumb screws. It had Allen keys. And I said, did it come with an Allen key? And the person said, no, it didn't. They didn't have it. I said, well, sometimes they're hidden in the machine. They're like, oh, I didn't see it. So I start looking. I open up the case. And of course, there's an Allen key hidden on the inside of the case for these adjustments, right? And there's like a little spot for it. And I was like, great. So I make all the adjustments. And it's fine. But it's like, if you don't think to look, you will never know. right? If you don't understand how things work, if you don't know how to make a straight line, if you don't know, like the first time I saw someone draw a line offset with just their hand and rubbing along the like a 2x4 and draw a perfect line, I said, they're faking it. Like the first thing that went through my mind is like, they're faking it. There's no way you can do it. And then I tried it and I was like, oh shit, that's way easier than I thought.
Yeah, so much easier than I thought, yeah. You know, it's funny.
As long as you don't get a sprint splinter, you're good to go.
Yeah, it's funny you say about like the not knowing where to look and stuff. You have a Cricut, right? Or your wife does?
Yes, I do. Yeah. It's right there.
So you know when the front door comes down and there's little doors inside there?
Yes.
The amount of people I have seen on like Cricut groups that say, I've had this machine for a year and never knew there was little compartments here.
Like, yeah.
How do you not? I don't get it.
So a lot of people don't even look for hinges or anything. They don't look to see.
That is also very common with sewing machines. Like I cannot tell y'all how many sewing machines I've taught people like, well, there's all this stuff you can open and there are extra pieces in here. Like this is how you get the bobbin in. Like, yeah, there's definitely a bit of a like learning curve when it comes to machinery. Yeah. So yeah, I think that is a very good point because just knowing one sewing machine, I can help people with like 10 other brands.
Well, and that's the whole thing about this bandsaw. I was like, I don't know this bandsaw at all, but I understand tools. I understand how they would try and set it up. They kept stalling because I think the blade had a little bit of a warp in it. So like there's one spot, if it stopped there, it wouldn't start again. And so like, I didn't show any of the little kids how to do this, but I would just move the blade and as it's still moving, press the on button, right? Like, get that motor going. But it's one of those things that you just learn as you go, but it's, I'm not teaching a 10-year-old that. I'm just going to put that out there.
Yeah, anything that involves touching the blade and moving it, probably not a good idea.
But you know what I would teach? You know the type of people I would teach?
Our patrons?
Yeah, you're right. Especially the F-Clamp level ones. Scott from Dad It Yourself DIY. Joe Herdina. David Wood from DW Wood Builds. Brad from I'm Gonna Make. And Chad from Chad's Custom Creations. And everyone else who supports us there. You can get onto patreon.com/clamp if you'd like to support us there. Like I said in the previous episode, if we get 10 new Patreon supporters, everyone who enters the Clamp Challenge will get access. We'll get a t-shirt of their size for a clamp. I guess I should talk about the Clamp Challenge. You're like, what's this Clamp Challenge? Well, the Clamp Challenge is back for 2024, and the basics of it is make a project that involves a clamp or many clamps because you can never have enough. Turn that clamp into something functional, artistic, or just plain fun. You'll have a chance to win great projects. The project has to be a new project that is completed between the start of March 1st, which is obviously already passed, and the end of the challenge, which is April 30th. By April 30th, that's right. You have 1 month to make some sort of clamp thing. Just to enter, all you need to do is post your project on the Instagram with the hashtag ClampChallenge2024 and tag ClampCast by the 30th of April for your chance to win. We have sponsors from Chapman Manufacturing, which, by the way, if you use Clamp24, you'll save yourself 15% on a 5575 kit. We have Housemate Industrial, who is providing us with a copper spoon kit for a coffee scoop and a swage block, which is, I think, really cool. So then you can make your own after that. You can make anything you want in a copper in a spoon shape, as well as Isotunes, who will be providing a gift card or an entry to get any of their products on their website, and a mallet from a weird guy. So yeah, great prizes. If you have any questions about it, if you don't know whether or not your project counts, if you don't know whether or not, you know, you want to like talk to us about it, hit us up. We want to see everyone's projects. We will talk about your projects every week as long as you tag us and we see it.
So you reminded me because I completely forgot. I finished my project.
Nice.
My challenge project. I forgot to talk about it at the beginning of the episode. If you want a sneak peek before my video comes out, go have a look on YouTube right now. But essentially, This is the clamp for my truck saw, which would normally have this stupid thing, and the handle keeps getting stuck. So I 3D printed this, which is a cam that can put in place.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah, it was really fun. I got two of these, obviously. But yeah, so and also it's like so much easier to just turn that than squeeze this.
I do think like cam locks, like I don't know why they're not more utilized, because they really feel like the way to go.
Well, the thing is, like there's like a grip on the bottom of the track and stuff, so the clamp isn't really like supporting the material or anything. It's just to help the track not move, so it doesn't need to be heaps of pressure.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Adam, I think you're making up for the fact that you didn't complete your project on time in the last clamp challenge. So
I definitely there you am.
Go. Yeah.
Yeah. I've just got to finish editing the video.
I still don't even have an idea of what I'm going to do.
Oh, no.
Because I am useless. And I've just been sick and kids.
Yeah, you've also been sick for like a week.
For a lot. Like, I don't know what it is. I feel like I'm approaching 40, and I feel like my body is saying, maybe we've had enough here, bud. Maybe this is enough. So, anyways, let's head on into clampmendations.
Clampmendations!
My clampmendation for this week is a project by Heck Yes Arts on Instructables. So we had our Stay Warm contest, which just closed. And this was one of the entries. So it's called Cookie Monster Fur Hat. And they turned a Cookie Monster stuffed toy into sort of like a trapper flap style hat. The Instructable is amazing. I am just, I don't know. I really get excited when people get weird with it. And so like the first few steps of the Instructable are them trapping the Cookie Monster and like dispatching him. So it's a little dark, but it's also really funny. But yeah, I think everyone should go look at it, because it's a really great example of a weird and well-documented project. And thank you, Luna, for rubbing my head right now. And let me see. So yeah, they got first prize in the Stay Warm contest. I think I voted them where they would get grand when I was doing my ballot, because I loved it so much. But yeah, I think everybody should go see it, because it is wonderful.
All right. Well, I guess I'll go next. If you've been following my Instagram stories religiously, like 12 of you do, you would have seen that I broke my Instructables mug, and that was my favorite mug. It wasn't like, as much as like I love Instructables, that's great, but I just loved the fact, like the way it felt, and the fact that it had like black on the inside.
Yeah,
that was what I really liked about it. And it just, the handle, I think my wife put them in the dishwasher with my other second favorite mug, my Grand Alexander mug, like handle to handle, and they like fought, and they both lost. Yeah, they jousted and both their handles broke, because that's what happened. So I reached out to someone that I saw wearing an Instructables shirt a lot and said, do you have this mug and do you use it? And it was Art from Words in Wood. And he said, I have a mug and I currently put pencils in it, I think. And I will gladly send it to you if you'd like it. Just, you know, pay for postage. And I was like, yes, I would love that. So now I have an Instructables mug back that is practically brand new, that I think has only ever housed some pencils or pens. So
I'm just don't get happy. Poisoned.
So you guys should all check out Art from Words and Wood. I think he's been a clampmendation of mine before, but he's got some good stuff. I recall he was one of the very first channels that I watched, and I think it was like a flip top. He did a flip top cart for like a planer and a, I don't know, whatever was on the other side. Like one of those ones where like you flip and it's one side and flip the other side. And the best part of that whole video I remember is he said, a lot of people talk about plywood storage, and I just like to store my plywood at the Home Depot or where, you know. I went, that is exactly, like, you do not need 4x8 sheets of plywood stored in your garage. Like, if you can't think of a project in advance enough to, like, go pick it up, then you got a problem. So that was one of the things that I went, I don't need 4x8 sheet of plywood storage, until somebody gave me a bunch of plywood, and now I have storage. It's free. How could I say no?
Yeah. So I don't think I've recommended this person before, but I'm going to clip and date someone called Rex H, who is a car YouTube channel here in Australia. I think he lives in Sydney, so he's not far from me. But yeah, he does some really good builds and stuff. He's blown up since I started following him. He's like 152,000 subscribers now, but he's currently rebuilding an R32 Skyline that he bought, which turned out to be stolen before he bought it.
Oh, Lord.
So he didn't buy a stolen car, but it had been stolen, which is why it was destroyed when he bought it. So he's currently trying to restore it. But yeah, cool. He has good content.
Nice. Well, and also, Grant, back to Dean Duplantis' mom.
Yes. She has
beautiful stuff. Oh, my God. The peacock door window? Damn. That's crazy.
It is. And I think she, I think she's been on the Making Our Way podcast, and she talked about, like, stained glass, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when Dean talks about her, it's as if everything just comes so easy to her. And she just, like, keeps doing all the classes, though. Because she wants to, like, get every little bit of knowledge out. Yeah. I think that's something, like, if you think that you like something so much, keep trying to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is so impressive. Yeah, I love that she also does, like, the 3D stained glass art. I'm always super impressed when I see people doing that, because that seems a lot tougher. So good.
Yeah. Well, on that note, let's head over to the Ask Us Anything.
Ask Us Anything. So the Ask Us Anything question for tonight comes from Warren Matten. This one is a little weird, but I thought it might be fun to discuss because I have an example and I don't know if y'all will have. So are taboo items more likely to be custom made than more accepted common items? Think ceiling suspension points, drug paraphernalia, etc. Are these therefore better products or markets to get into? So kind of like one of my embroidery side hustles is a lot of cannabis like themed stuff, or like just drug themed stuff in general. I've definitely dabbled in it. People know to come and ask me for it, but I'm not sure that I would be comfortable kind of putting a whole business around it, because we all know how, you know, especially Instagram, they've just kind of decided things aren't what they're going to show anymore. Yeah. And so I would be really, really scared to just have my entire shop demolished and all of like my traffic and my customers just disappear. So I don't know.
And Etsy's done the same thing too.
Yes. Yeah. Etsy. Heard. Absolutely. So just, yeah. Yeah. They can just shut you down with no reason over there. So like I've always been a little hesitant, but I've always been open to doing it, you know? Like I made a really nice cannabis patch leaf for one of Tyler's coworkers. I've done like a bunch of sort of like cursy cannabis embroideries for friends and family. But yeah, I don't know that I would want to just go all out with it because there are so many risks to doing it.
I think that if you are relying on a local word of mouth, that this is a good business strategy. Mm-hmm. And I think if you are trying to do anything at all that involves a national or international business potentially promoting your stuff, or that's how you're hoping to get in front of, like, even I think about like Austin High Caliber Craftsman. He was advertising his pens on Facebook for a long time. They're spent shells from like ammunition. And then all of a sudden they were like, uh-oh, sorry, those are bullets and bullets are bad. And now all of a sudden you can't, not only can you not advertise with us, we're going to shut down all your shit. And he's like, well, that was like crazy. And I think I recall him being like, there, he's been served up ads for similar stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like, but you banned, you like banned me or shadow banned me. And like all the knife people right now on Instagram are complaining about being like taken down. And I've seen a couple of like, a couple of the photos didn't even have knives in them. I'm like, what is happening here? But they had used like a hashtag, like knives of Instagram or something. And
yeah.
Yeah. So I honestly think the opposite. I have seen a lot of businesses and stuff on Etsy selling drug paraphernalia stuff.
Yeah. But do you know how many of them get shut down every day?
I'm sure they do, but there's also ways around it. Like there's, I know there's plenty of people that get away with it, that they know how to get around it. You've got to put up the picture with like a certain blur or something or whatever. There's definitely ways to do it. But it's just knowing so, how.
Etsy, though, has gotten real intense. I actually got in trouble for having curse words on my main photos. Like, they took listings down and basically told me if I did not edit them and I put them back up, they would shut my shop down. So, like, that's why I get nervous. Like, so on Etsy, for example, I just typed bong. They don't allow you to search for bongs. But then I type hash pipe. And stuff comes up. And so like there, it's just, I don't know. The moderation on all these sites is so fucking crazy. I think because most of it is done by computer these days. Like no one has humans looking at stuff.
Yeah, everything is AI.
It gets too big. Mm-hmm. And when it gets too big, you cannot have, you could not afford the staff to look at all this shit. Same with like Instructables. I'm sure it's the same.
Right? Oh, like, no, we still look at everything. Like, the only thing now that we don't have to look through all of it is the spam. We do have some really excellent spam filters now, but we look at pretty much everything, either to approve it or to feature it, you know?
Right. But it's a lot, though. Could become a problem that you couldn't get through it all in a day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Tinkercad is like that now. Like, yeah, we don't. A lot of times there will be spam on the site or like something questionable that we just don't see because there's like thousands of things coming in. So I do slightly understand it, but I don't know. When you're running like a community, I really feel like you should have more fucking humans. It just makes me so crazy.
I 100% agree. Like when I got the very first thing I posted to TikTok got like flagged.
Oh, really?
I challenged it, and I got, nah, and I challenged it again, and it got, like, yeah, no, you're good to go. Here's 50 million views.
Yeah. And I was like, TikTok is especially bad.
Right. Like, and so people are, like, turning to other media, like TikTok or whatever. Like, wherever you go, you need to find it is not relying on someone else. You need to rely on yourself.
Just so you know, we haven't actually answered the question. I think definitely for quality, they're more likely to be custom made. I definitely see a lot of the stuff that you could buy on AliExpress and all that sort of stuff, but it's cheap Chinese rubbish. If you wanted the quality stuff, it's more likely to be custom made. So yes, I say yes.
I think taboo items are easily found cheaply produced elsewhere because they don't even understand their taboo.
Exactly.
So you could find it cheaply. You can also find good custom stuff. So if you're thinking of trying to sell like drug paraphernalia, like the amount of people who've asked me to make them like a pipe, and I'm like, I don't, why would you think I could make you a pipe? Because I'm a woodworker? Like, I don't understand why you think I could make you like a Harry Potter pipe or something for you to like try and blow a sailing ship like Gandalf did in the Lord of the Rings, which I'm just taking all the movies. I don't know. Anyways, I would say there is a possibility of demand, but you also have to worry about if it's local, it's probably fine. Like, I know there's leather crafters that I've talked to that were big into local scenes where leather might play a part. And that can work for you if you're interested in that.
Folsom Street Fair, anyone?
Yeah. But otherwise, like, I don't know.
In saying that, with the whole local thing, there was, I remember because I messaged, my brain just turned off, High Caliber Craftsman about getting some of his bullet pens. And he said to me, I can't ship them to Australia. Like, they won't get through customs.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Good things, bad things, possibly, maybe. I don't know.
I think the general consensus is yes, they will be custom made, but it might also not be a very good business idea. Maybe.
Well, even if it, like, so certain taboo items are taboo for, like, a much more, like, no matter how much money you pay me, I'm not making a swastika.
Swastika. No. Mm-mm.
Right. Yeah. But there are people out there who clearly make them because you still see them around, right?
Yep.
So it is like, what do they pay more for it? Are they willing to pay more for it? Maybe they are. I'm not willing to make it, so I don't know what they're willing to pay. But
yeah.
Just quickly before we do move on, have you guys seen the reel of someone building this like wooden rack thing? And it looks like they're building a bench for working out, but it turns out to be like a whole like sex thing.
No.
Oh, I've got to find it and put it in the show notes because it's funny as like all the comments are like, I thought they were building a weight bench. And it's literally like, it finishes with a chick like with her legs like back over her head strapped into like this wooden block. Like, what are those things where like they used to have in the olden days with the people's head and hands in the.
Stocks.
Yeah, it's like.
The stocks.
Yeah, it's like
the
one stocks. Of those. It's crazy. Yeah.
Well. On that note, I want to thank TF Turning for the theme song, and I want to thank everyone for listening this far. And if you want to find us, you can search Clampcast everywhere, and you'll find us. And until next time, cheers and have a great day.
Bye.
Bye.